You are listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. My name's Jack Thurston, and this is The Bike Show. And today on The Bike Show, we're going to be doing something which I've wanted to do for a long time, which is take a look at Mayor of London Ken Livingstone's green plans. He announced last week his proposal that London should become the greenest major city in the world, and he announced a whole raft of policies to make that happen. And we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about what it is that politicians can do and what it is that we can do, and whether cycling plays anything more than a purely marginal part of the equation. Here in the studio to help me dissect what it is that London is doing to become the greenest city in the world is Erica Jobson from Futera, which is a sustainable development communications firm, advisor, agency. What is Futera all about? Let's talk us about where you're from first, and then we'll start talking about Ken Livingstone. Welcome to the show.
Bye. Thank you very much. Well, Futera describes itself as a think, plan and do tank, which is a very grand title. So we do quite a lot of thought leadership about environmental issues. We also work with a whole range of companies and governments and NGOs, helping them communicate their sustainability. And then we also do practical stuff like training and design work for them.
Great. And you came over today on your bicycle, I
Indeed,
see.
Indeed, I did.
With a bike helmet, a giveaway sign. Did you have a good journey?
I did, until I forgot which number I was supposed to be coming to at the last minute.
Yeah,
I
you were
failed
cutting
by my organisation.
Well, no, I mean, there have been about 80 episodes or something around that of The Bike Show in the last 2.5 years that we've been doing it, and I have not yet been stood up by a guest, although I felt it was coming a bit close today. But anyway, you made it. Hooray.
Thank you.
And as we all know, cycling in London is the only way to make sure you get anywhere on time, even if it's just by the slightest of margins. So there was a lot of fanfare and a lot of stuff in the news about what Ken had to announce. I guess, you know, the headline was that he was the sign of his ambition for London to be the greenest world city, and setting up a climate change agency and a lot of other kind of policies. How would you go about evaluating, you know, what was announced last week?
Well, I think it was really exciting to have a London Climate Change Action Plan is a real blueprint for the future. London is a world city. It's the foremost city in the UK. And so I think it's good that they're setting the lead. I think it's difficult at the moment to see past the fanfare, as you say, which very much was evident. And I think it's maybe too soon to see what will happen in practice.
Well, London, according to the mayor, accounts for 8% of the UK's emissions, although that doesn't include aviation, which I think if you included London's, you know, the London airport's emissions of carbon in that total, it would be much higher. So 8% of the UK, and the UK is what, 2% of world emissions. It's a bit of a drop in the bucket, isn't it? Making London, you know, a green city. What is that going to save the planet?
I think it's not going to save the planet overnight, but that's still a significant proportion, and everyone's together in the same place, so it's a good place to do some high-profile behaviour change, and that's the important, for me, that's the essence of what this is about. And I think if London can be seen to be doing it, there'll be a spill effect to the rest of the South East and then the rest of the UK. You also have to think, although London, you're saying, is quite a small proportion, think how many people travel into London and work there, and the overspill effect of that.
I mean, yeah, looking into the details, into the breakdown a little bit more, it says here that London's carbon dioxide emissions are 38% domestic, 33% commercial and public sector, so I guess that's businesses and hospitals and things like that, 7% industrial, and 22% ground-based transportation. And that apparently has actually come down. The amount that has come is being produced from transport in London has come down, partly, I would say, because there's been a 72% increase in the number of people riding their bikes over the last 5 years in the city, and also a much bigger uptake of public transport. And I guess the spokesman for the mayor would say that it is the congestion charge, this is the reinvestment of more money to bring the tube into a better state of repair, more buses, renewal of the railways. So the congestion charge, I suppose, is the centrepiece. And that is something that I get asked about all the time when I'm talking to people from other countries about, you know, cycling and other things. They say, you got this congestion charge. How successful has the congestion charge been, do you think? What have been the impacts? Do you think it's about actually reducing carbon, or do you think it's about making a statement to say, look, this is a city, in the centre of the city, you go by public transport?
I think it's definitely both those things. I think it makes people question, before they step into the car every morning, they think, do I need to make this journey through central London by car? Would it be easier and certainly cheaper to take the train or the bus or jump on my bike? I think, it's good for the image of London, and it's easier for London to do it than perhaps for other cities, because London's so unique, being the capital and the centre of commerce and the centre of finance, that they can do it, when other cities it would be harder because people would just go to the next town along where they could drive into it. So London is more able than I think other places are.
Well, although other places around the world, I mean, Paris could have a congestion charge. San Francisco could very easily have a congestion charge. You know, it's a peninsula. Manhattan, likewise. I think a lot of places are looking, but no one seems to have jumped. And I'm not quite sure why that is. The recent changes in the congestion charge are that it's gone up to £8 a day, which I think was last year sometime. And then a couple of weeks ago, it was extended to a whole new zone in West London. And there are arguments in favour and against that, partly because of the fact that the residents in that new zone now get the right for a 90% resident discount and can travel in their cars all over the whole zone without having to pay the congestion charge. But I think probably overall they wouldn't have gone for it if they didn't think it would cut journeys into that new western zone. And then something that caught my eye in the press conference last week was this statement that they may be having a new higher tier of the congestion charge, which will be £25 rather than £8, and that would be applying to the very most polluting cars, so the kind of urban 4x4 Chelsea tractors or sports utility vehicles or whatever you want to call them. And aside from just putting forward the £25 as the fee for driving one of those cars in the centre of London, Ken said that buying a gas guzzling 4x4 vehicle is an individual choice, but it creates carbon emissions that contribute to global warming and harm everyone. It should be no more socially acceptable than to claim the right to dump rubbish in the street. I mean, that to me is pretty radical, even for a politician who likes the headlines like Ken Livingstone. What do you think of that kind of messaging? How would that fit in with Futera's approach to communicating the need to make change to make a more sustainable future?
Yeah, I think what he said is very radical, and on a personal note, I would agree with him. I think in an urban setting, a four-wheel drive car is impractical and certainly unnecessary. And as a cyclist, I feel they have a lot less awareness, and their attitude is noticeably more aggressive than other cars. Mm. I think his messaging is quite strong, and I don't think people should feel punished for all their actions and stuff. And he does say it's a personal choice, but I would agree with him on that one.
Yeah, so where is this line between the stick and the carrot, between telling people that they're being evil and encouraging them to do good? How do you draw that distinction? I mean, where do you use the stick and where do you use the carrot?
I think you've got to use both. It is always a difficult one. Now, Futera likes to give a positive message. I don't want people to think, oh, I don't want to be, I want to be green, but it's too difficult, and everyone's telling me I'm doing this, and I shouldn't do that, and I shouldn't do that. It doesn't need to be like that. Being more environmentally responsible can be a much nicer way to live, especially in an urban environment. I think there's a role for government to bring in incentives, and there's also a role for government to reward good green behaviour.
And so how can you create those desires to do good out of the sense of, you know, positive thinking rather than vilifying people who don't do the right thing or don't do the thing that's ecologically sustainable? I mean, what are some examples of the advice that you might give?
I think to the government, I would point to schemes that they are doing where they sort of work bike financing schemes, which can be a positive way to encourage people to cycle to work. I think in our individual lives, it's at the moment there's not a huge amount of evidence of reward of good green behaviour, although I think there's looking at new green taxes is something that in the future may come about.
And what about David Cameron riding to work every day, the leader of the Conservative Party? Is that set, you know, he's ahead in the polls. Does the fact that he rides a bike mean that other people are going to think about riding bikes?
It depends if he's being followed by a car with all his parliamentary papers.
Oh, you've read the Labour Party's rapid rebuttal on that one. Okay, time for some music. Fantastic track from Eka Mouse, alerted to my attention by Dr. Hans Noodleman of the Society for Primitive Cycling. And if you've listened to the Bike Show on Resonance FM before, you know that that's the kind of thing that gets me excited. What on earth is primitive cycling? Dr. Hans, this is an invitation. You've got to come on the show. I want to hear all about it. But not this week, because this week we are talking about greening London. And I have Erica Jobson in the studio with me from Futera, who spends her day advising governments and companies on sustainability and communications. So, Erica, where is the line between what is the role of politicians, people like Ken Livingstone, people like Gordon Brown, people like George Bush? What can they do? And what is it that they can't do? What can they not touch? And what is it essentially down to us as individuals to do?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. Take, for example, cycling. At the moment, there's lots of people cycling around London, but I think we could almost see ourselves quite proudly as pioneers. We're dicing with the traffic every so often, and that's really good, and we're setting the agenda, but not everyone is prepared to do that. So the people can pioneer the behaviour, and then I think it's the role of government to step in and make that easier, to enable people who don't want to be pioneers to take on environmentally favourable behaviour, so putting in more cycle lanes and prosecuting people who treat cyclists badly, or giving better allowances for people to buy bicycles and things such as that, which I think would help more people have the initiative and courage to get on those bikes and cycle around.
I mean, traditionally, Transport for London has been very keen on things like cycle training and also cycle parking, safe, secure cycle parking. They seem to believe that that's one of the real reasons why people don't use bicycles, is because they're scared that they're going to get nicked in the city, which is, you know, a fair point. So putting in good cycle racks and covers over the top, and sometimes in even, you know, manned cycle stores, so that you can check in your bike and be absolutely sure that your £3,000 piece of titanium that weighs as light as a feather will be okay when you come back after work. There was a section in the mayor's strategy about cycling, and he promises further enhancements of cycling infrastructure in London with a greater level of awareness of the benefits associated with cycling. I think that basically means lots of advertising hoardings. I mean, I get a bit frustrated with Transport for London just putting up loads of kind of slightly cheesy government adverts saying, get on your bike and, you know, be healthy, and it's really nice. And apparently they've devoted, well, I heard, I'm not sure if this is true, but a freedom of information request will certainly help us to find out. But Transport for London cycling budget for this year has been more or less handed over in its entirety to the organisers of the Tour de France, which of course comes to London this year, and God knows what they're going to be doing with it. But I think they're putting their money in the basket of visibility and making it, you know, more visible and I suppose more attractive. And I don't see much investment going on into making it safer, whether you think that's by cycle lanes or whether that's by restructuring the way that roundabouts work and things like that. We shall see. We shall see. So in terms of other areas of sustainability, and particularly, you know, the question of climate change, there are things that people can do in their homes. There's quite a big emphasis on insulation of homes in the mayor's action plan. And then there's the kind of thorny old issue of light bulbs. I mean, is this a symbolic issue, or is this something that actually makes a difference? If we all changed our light bulbs, then, you know, the polar bears will be guaranteed a rosy future.
I think it's certainly both. It is an old chestnut that everyone likes to talk about. But if you look at the stats, buildings are responsible for 40% of carbon emissions. Now, that's not all lighting, but it is a significant factor. Now, if everyone did buy an energy-saving light bulb, which, if you're reminded of, are more expensive initially but have a much longer life and so will actually save you money as well, that would make a real difference to our carbon emissions.
And do you notice that things have changed? You know, you look at this stuff every day, and do you measure the extent to which people are more aware of this? I mean, there was the, you know, Al Gore's big film and winning the Oscar. The magazine Rolling Stone had a front page on climate change recently. Is this a sea change, or is this just a fad that we're going to pass by, and it seems like every time the government sets a new target, then they, you know, a few years later they announce that they're not going to meet that target, and then everyone gets a bit, you know, disgruntled and doesn't bother to change their light bulbs. How can you make this a permanent change?
I think it's definitely reached a tipping point. A couple of years ago, people looked at me slightly strangely and said, oh, you're working in that slightly green field. Now everyone wants to know about it and what we do and why we do it. I think it is here to stay. I think if you look at the statistics, there's not a lot of negotiation on climate change. It is a reality. The detractors are getting lesser and lesser and slightly more eccentric every time you do hear them still on the radio. I think keeping the momentum is the thing. In the media, it's very, to excuse the pun, hot topic at the moment, but it's maintaining that impetus and the interest from the media, because we need to keep the message plugging away.
Well, we do need to keep the message plugging away, and we do need to keep Resonance FM plugging away.
In life for free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want money, that's what I want, that's what I want, that's what I want. Your love gives me such a thrill, but your love won't pay my bills. I want money.
Well, this is very true. We love to be loved on Resonance 104.4 FM and on The Bike Show, but we do need your money. The station does need your money to continue in operation. And last month, the month of February, the month of Valentine's Day, was our fundraising drive. And you may think that now we're into March, we're going to spare you all of that. Well, not on The Bike Show. I'm going to keep hammering away. We had a very, very positive response from a lot of listeners to the appeal we made when Guy Andrews from Ruler magazine was in the studio, and lots of people gave money, and I think a lot of that was down to the fact that Guy was giving away a whole load of the new issue of Ruler, which costs an absolute fortune if you buy it in the shops, but it was free to the first dozen or so people who donated to Resonance. I haven't got anything to give you apart from my love and goodwill and thanks and the continuation of Resonance FM as a radio station, because if we don't raise this money by the summer, if we don't raise the £60,000 that we need, which is about a quarter of what it takes to keep the station on air for a year, the station will close and the bike show will end. There will be no bike show. A few people have emailed me saying, oh, we're really worried about Resonance, but if Resonance stops broadcasting, will the bike show continue as a podcast? And I can answer that question definitively now. No, it will not. There will be no bike show if there's no Resonance FM. So make your contributions now. You can do it very easily. Go to the Resonance FM website, which is www.resonancefm.com. There's a link there from the bike show's website, www.thebikeshow.net. You can donate a small amount, you can donate a large amount, you can sign up to be a regular donor, join the Friends of Resonance scheme, which costs £10 a month. And if you do that, you will get given lots of lovely things. You get something every month and something super special every 3 months. So that is something that I would encourage you to do. If we don't raise this money, the station will close, and it's as simple as that. It's not scaremongering. This is absolutely the way things are. So please, 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 just get online, send us a cheque, 9 Denmark Street, just off the Charing Cross Road. The proper address is on the website. We do need your money very, very, very much. And with that out of the way, Erica, you're back.
Hello.
Climate change. I mean, I guess the threat of global warming and the melting of the ice caps probably puts the travails of Resonance FM a little bit into the shade. Is London going to be a green city? Do you see it? Do you feel it when you go, you know, when you go to places like Amsterdam or Berlin, and you definitely feel that just it's a kind of everyday matter that people are green? Can London do that? Do we care enough as Londoners to make this happen?
I think London can be a green city. I think the potential's there, and this gives a good framework and a good raising the bar. And I think now it's up to individuals, and I think it remains to be seen if people care enough. I care enough, Futera cares a lot, but there's a lot of people out there who at the moment need convincing, and I think we need to give positive messages rather than telling people that they can't do. We have to tell them that it's more exciting, it's great cycling across London, and messages like that to get people to want to do the behaviour change. If it's enforced upon them, they'll do it, but they might not keep that behaviour. It might not freeze, as we put it. So I think keeping people enthusiastic and actually wanting to change their behaviour is the way we need to look forward.
Yeah, because one of the lines that Ken used in his press conference was that he wanted to change behaviour but not diminish the quality of people's lives. And I would have played a little bit of what Ken had to say in his press conference, but the audio feed from the Mayor of London's webcast is so terribly poor. I don't know who's responsible for it, but they obviously don't know how to make a webcast. Let's hope they know how to have a green policy for London. Erica, thanks very much for coming into the studio. Thanks for coming on The Bike Show. I wish you a speedy return journey. Where are you going back to tonight?
Going over to Barbican.
Over to the Barbican, not far. You'll be cycling along one of the sewage lines, which I mentioned in The Guardian this morning about secret tips for getting around London. So think about that. As you're cycling along Theobald's Road East, there's a great big Victorian sewage pipe right beneath you.
Great. Thank you very much.
Charming thought. Well, this is the penultimate edition of The Bike Show of the current season. And tomorrow night, which is Tuesday night, I am going to be DJing with my Continental Drift hat on at the launch of the new Rafa Condor team. So more about that next week. If you're coming along, do pop by and say hello. And this is sort of some of the music that I'm going to be playing, I think. Cheesy continental European pop.
Salita da fare per me che sono fuggito subito, rapporti che devo cambiare, lo stomaco dentro al giornale per me e devo restare lucido, e quanta strada che verrà, ma non mi avrai, io non mi staccherò, guarda la tua ruota e io ci sarò. Cento e più chilometri alle spalle, cento da fare, di sicuro non arriva più qualcuno dei miei, tutta quella gente che ti grida non ti fermare, e tu che mi vuoi lasciare, non ci provare, non mi stancherò. Scivolano case tra persone fuori a guardare, ci sarà riparo al vento lungo questo pavé, ci sarà la polvere che nel respiro mi sale, ma non mi potrò voltare, non mi chiamare, non risponderò. Cannibale in cima, e io che devo volare a prenderlo. Sudore di gente dispersa, di maglia, di lingua diversa, ma io il cuore io voglio spenderlo. E quanto tempo passerà in mezzo a noi, ancora non lo so. Dietro alla tua ruota io ci sarò. Sarà più qualcuno con noi, devi dare.
You're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM, brought to you by the London Musicians Collective.